Welcome to the OVC Extra Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Schwartz, Assistant Commissioner for Strategic Communications at the Ohio Valley Conference. If you want to catch up on a previous episode, you can find us wherever you download your podcast with complete information at ovcsports.com/podcast. It has been a few weeks since our last episode, partially because there has been so much happening with what has been the busiest spring season ever. But the plan is to return with a normal schedule and more frequent episodes soon. Episode 23 features Belmont head women's basketball coach Bart Brooks. Bart just finished his fourth season as the Belmont head coach, leading the team to its third OVC tournament title of his tenure, and also an NCAA tournament victory over Gonzaga, the first for an OVC women's team in 30 years. We discuss playing basketball during a pandemic, how his team found its groove after a long pause in January, casual attire for coaches on the sidelines this season, his path to the Belmont job, his work with the OVC Social Justice Working Group, and his family. Now, my conversation with Bart Brooks. Coach Brooks, thanks for taking the time joining the OVC podcast, coming off a tremendous season for the Belmont women's basketball program.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. It's a pleasure to be here and appreciate all you do for us.
Well, unprecedented is a word that's been thrown around a lot this year. How would you say, what is it like to play basketball in a pandemic?
Yeah, it was challenging. I mean, I think back to where we were, where our minds were as the season was about to start. And, you know, the NCAA came out with, moving the start date back a couple weeks. And I just remember thinking at that time, you know, are we even going to be able to play games? Is this ever going to really be a reality for us? And then I think once some of the football programs were able to play and then it got closer that, you know, we were actually going to do this, we're going to try this. And then we started to play games. And I tell you what, our team, we didn't really have a lot of disruptions early. We were able to play the first five, six games and got all of our non-conference games in. And it was, you know, it started to feel like, okay, this could actually happen this year. And then obviously, you know, we hit a bump in the road with some COVID issues, and we had a month between games, and it was, I tell you what, as a coach, you never really know what every season has a life of its own, just like every game has a life of its own. And once we were in the middle of it, I wasn't prepared for 99% of the stuff that was thrown at us this year, and we just had to figure it out on the fly. But I think it's a credit to, I've got great coaches on my staff, and our players did a great job of just rolling with everything and making the most of the situation.
So December 20th, you play and you beat Auburn. And then as you referenced, you don't play another game until January 19th. Is that right?
Yep.
You know, you had a game where I believe it was canceled while you were warming up on the court, just a bunch of different things. What is going through your mind as that? Are we going to play another game again? Did that cross your mind during that time?
Yeah, for sure it did. And I think that was kind of the stretch where there had been, you know, three or four programs around the country that had already canceled their seasons. And, you know, I just remember as we were going through it, I just remember feeling like I get it. Why people aren't playing right now, because it was just such a draining period for our players. And it's already difficult to be, you know, on campus with the restrictions and not being able to really go to in-person classes and not being able to hang out, not being able to use our locker room. And then if you take the basketball piece away, which was really the release of these players, I mean, the only normalcy in their day for the most part was spending 2 hours in the gym where they could practice and be together. And when that was taken away from us in the midst of that 3 week stretch in January, it was real for me that, you know, this is, I don't know if we're going to recover from this. And, you know, again, just the unbelievable resiliency of our team, our players, I just look at them and I'm still in awe of them, what they accomplished, you know, in the midst of that adversity.
I would think it's hard enough to be a student athlete in a normal year, just everything you have going on that's not basketball, that's not academics. How do you think your players handled it for the most part, even going all the way back to last March when, you know, you had some postseason opportunities to play in, but everything was canceled and everybody had to go home?
Yeah, I mean that just seems it's amazing to think of where we were a year from now. You know, a year from now, this was just all starting, and we probably didn't really have a good understanding of what was coming at us. But I think the players, you're right on the money that to be a Division I student athlete, the time demands are off the charts. And in a great year, in a normal year where everything goes well, and you know you have some success. It's really hard for freshmen to come in and transition from high school to college just because of the time demands of school, how demanding, physically demanding basketball. The season is long, it's a grind. And if you add the mental stresses of the pandemic to all of that, and you take away some of the fun stuff, I think the challenge it just exponentially gets more and more difficult. You know, the more I examine it, I'm still a little bit confused at how we actually did this year. But as I look at it, you know, a lot of the freshmen came in and they didn't know any different. They didn't really know what normal life is like because they haven't experienced it yet. So I think that was maybe a benefit for them. And our older players did a great job of, I think, just staying the course and helping them understand that this is a temporary thing. It's not permanent. And we just got to get, you know, for me, I just reminded myself this more than the team that I just got to get through today, figure out how to get through today, whatever that holds, whether it's a practice or a film session or even a day off. Just we got to get through this day and then we'll figure out tomorrow.
Well, you mentioned day off and your schedule got compacted. You're basically playing three games every week the rest of the way, but it's sort of that time your team found its groove. You lost the SEMO on February 9th, and then you didn't lose again until your very last game in the NCAA tournament. How did you all manage the busy schedule and then really coming together to play your best basketball?
I think that probably helped us more than anything in that our players got to do the most fun part of the season, which is play games. And, you know, we didn't have to spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours a day in a practice gym and playing against each other. You know, we didn't have male practice players this year, which was a new thing. We usually have a male practice squad come in and we get to play against them. And it got to the point by the end of the year where I think our players were sick of playing against each other. They didn't want to play against each other anymore just because of how much, you know, they had been competing against each other in the preseason and the early part of our season. And, you know, once we got to that point where we were back and playing and 3 games a week, I think it was really a blessing for our team to be able to play games, to play against other people, to have that togetherness that we started to form maybe a little more team chemistry, the spending time together. You know, the thing that I think we missed the most this year was our freshmen. We had 5 freshmen on the roster. They didn't get to spend a preseason with our upperclassmen. They didn't go to the locker room after a tough practice and hear from the upperclassmen about, you know, what it, you know, that, well, you think this was tough, what about last year? And then hear all those stories that, you know, that always trickle down from one class to another. You know, this year after practice, they'd all go to their separate dorm rooms and they were just kind of isolated just because of the COVID protocols. So, yeah, I think the games and as much as it was stressful and crazy for me, I would have given anything during that stretch to have a week of practice. I would have probably given up, you know, 2 months' salary if we could just have a week of practice here. But I think it probably was the best thing in the world for our team and our players and their mental ability to just enjoy and being together and competing.
Well, you got to the OVC tournament and you had won OVC tournament championships. You'd been at the Ford Center, obviously. This year, things are different. Just all for fans listening, they probably saw the protocols on TV, the benches and the tier system. But you get to the tournament, you have a very close first round game with Austin Peay. Then you beat Murray State and you get UT Martin for the third time in 4 years in the title game. Just what was the run like? Being that things were different, but again, your team was playing its best basketball.
Yeah, I mean it was you're right. We came into that tournament with a lot of momentum. I mean we were playing really well down the stretch of the regular season. You know, the last week we were on the road for 3 straight games and I felt like we were playing our best at that moment. And then we get to the Ford Center and it was unlike any experience that we've had at the Ford Center just because of the protocols and not being able to share that moment with families like we usually did, and just the added you know, the stresses of sitting in that testing room, waiting results, you know, knowing what could or could not happen. You know, they come in and they give you the thumbs up or the thumb, felt like we were in Gladiator. You know, they were giving us the thumbs up or thumbs down if we're able to continue to survive or if we were done. And that added stress, I think, just that was just part of what we were used to throughout the year. But once you get to the floor and you start playing and competing, I think the excitement of being in a conference tournament and our young players experiencing it for the first time, you never know how young players are going to respond in that moment. And once we started to play and we got on the floor, I just felt like it really wasn't our best stuff until probably the second half of the Murray State game, the second game, where we started actually just kind of the burden of, I don't know what we were carrying around, but I think it just the nerves of the one and out basketball, tournament basketball. And I think we started to relax and play loose and play free. And from that point forward, I think that was what our team, you know, that's who we were at the end of the regular season. And, you know, credit to Austin Peay and Murray State. They gave us everything we could handle. I think that really what that speaks to is how good this league is. And, you know, Tennessee Martin, you know, I think they were every bit as good as a Gonzaga team we played in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And, you know, to play against that level of competition in the OVC championship and then to turn around and really play a really similar team in Gonzaga in the first round of the NCAA tournament, you know, that was unbelievable preparation for us. And I think it was I think that gave our team the confidence we needed to go in and get that first round win.
So you beat UT Martin in the final. Again, we said it's different. The celebration's different. The families aren't down there. But how did you let your student athletes know, like, hey, we need to enjoy this because you may never win in their championship. You have to enjoy it when you win.
Yeah, I think I let them spray me with the coldest water. I think they put that water in ice for, you know, it might have been ice. It was so cold. But we enjoyed the heck out of that win. I mean, it was a tough, hard season. And, you know, we always have a goal in this program that we want to play in the NCAA tournament. But, you know, this season there was so many unknowns that we did away with goals this year. We just talked about, let's just try to live up to the standards of our program every day. And if we do that, that will define our success this year. And because we didn't, you know, it could have easily been taken away from us. A positive test could have taken away our chance to even compete. So we didn't want to have our success rely on something that we couldn't control. So once we got to that moment, though, in that locker room and we were able to celebrate together, you know, there was just such a feeling of you know, satisfaction for me, relief, joy. It was a special moment. And I'm fortunate enough to have watched our team cut down the nets, you know, three times now in the Ford Center. And every single one of those times has been magical and special. But I tell you what, this year hit different just because of what we went through and, you know, what the young people on our team, what they overcame to get to that point. It just hit a little bit different this year.
So we'll talk about the NCAA tournament in just a sec. One thing I did want to ask, though, you play UT Martin, you're facing off with them. You look across the other bench, a familiar face, Darby Maggard, who was the MVP of the OVC tournament your first year. You know, she's a graduate assistant with the Skyhawks. What's it like seeing one of your former athletes go on and now she's coaching against your team?
Yeah, you know, Darby has done so much for Belmont women's basketball. And, you know, I'm looking at a picture at my office wall right now, of Darby holding up trophies and, you know, just the relationship that she's had with our current players, but even you know, just our staff, just everyone around Belmont. There's such a good memory and such a good feeling about Darby and what she's done for this program. And I know she's going to be a rock star coach in this profession. She's going to be really good. And as difficult it is to feel like we're competing against her, I'm unbelievably proud of her that she's started her journey as a coach after playing professionally. I know that was always a goal of hers, and she got paid money to play basketball, which is not a lot of people on planet Earth can say that. That's a pretty cool thing that she achieved and accomplished. And I know she's going to be a great coach. She's working for a guy, Coach McMillan, who does a great job with his program. She's going to learn a ton from him, and I'm excited for it. It's not easy or fun to compete against your friends, but or someone who's done so much for our program. But I'm so proud of her and what she's started, and I know she's gonna crush it when she gets out and starts coaching.
So the NCAA tournament experience is obviously different as well. For the people listening who don't know, it was all the games are in the San Antonio area in the bubble. So the experience is a little different, but it's the NCAA tournament. So you get to San Antonio, you're playing Gonzaga. They got off to a fast start. You all stormed back. Just kind of walk us through that game and just the emotions of playing and then finally getting that win against Gonzaga.
Yeah, I mean, it was a unique experience. Usually, you know, when you get to the NCAA tournament, the gyms are packed. It's just an environment that you dream about and you see it on TV. And then this year, because it was the bubble and there were restrictions on number of people who could be in attendance, and it was, you know, obviously all the teams in one location, and we ended up playing at Texas State in San Marcos, which was about an hour drive from San Antonio. It was just a little bit different when we took the floor. You know, the energy was going to be provided by our team and our bench more than it was going to be, you know, felt in the arena. But that's all the periphery, the beginning before the game stuff. But once the game started, it felt exactly like an NCAA tournament game has always felt, which is, you know, we're playing against someone who's really good. We're going to have to play really well to beat them. And we're going to have to be locked in and sharp with all of our assignments. And, you know, we started the game in Gonzaga. They came out and they hit us with a pretty good punch early. And I just remember we challenged our team at that first time out going into the second quarter. We challenged our team that, you know, we're going to have to step up and compete physically or we're going to get blown out here. And I just felt like our team, they're too tough. They're too resilient to not step up to that challenge. And man, they stepped up and they competed. And, you know, it's rare that as a program, when you're a 12 seed and you're playing a 5 seed or you're a 13 seed and playing a 4 seed, you know, it's not always easy to get a matchup that you can compete against and have a chance to win. And I thought that our team did an unbelievable job of giving us a chance down the stretch of that game. And then for them to make the plays down the stretch to seal a win, you know, that was an incredible job of taking advantage of their opportunity.
What emotion then goes through you? You're excited you win, but the buzzer sounds. What is Bart Brooks feeling?
You know, I'm thrilled for our players. I mean, I watch them celebrate on the floor. I think about, you know, one of the first thoughts I had was, you know, just wishing I was able to celebrate with my wife and my two kids who were back home in Nashville. You know, they weren't able to make the trip. And also just looking at our players and knowing that they wish they could run up and hug their families and enjoy it. But being so grateful that they were together in that moment, that they got to experience something that so many players, you know, there's players that play their entire career and never even get to compete in an NCAA tournament, let alone win a game in a tournament. So that was an unbelievable feeling. And then I think my thoughts quickly went to thinking about all of the women who went before us. You know, Betty Wiseman started this program in 1968, and she did it because she wanted women to have an opportunity to be educated through sport and to be able to compete and to be able to play the games that they loved and were passionate about. And they did it with a whole lot less than we had. And they did it because they were competitive. They wanted a chance to play. They wanted to experience some of those same moments that our players got to experience. And, you know, as I'm watching our team celebrate on the floor, I'm looking out and I just see us standing on the shoulders of all of those women who came before us, that we would not have been in that place had they not sacrificed what they sacrificed to get us there. And even though they weren't with us in the moment, we felt them and we felt the support of our alums and everyone who's built this place into what this program is. And so that was that's a lot to go through your mind in the instance that buzzer sounds, but honestly, that one of the first things I thought about was how meaningful this was, you know, for everyone that's played at Belmont, not just the current team.
You referenced earlier about the OVC and its level of talent. Now, that was the first NCAA tournament win in 30 years for a women's basketball team in OVC, which is really unbelievable to think about it. It had been that long. The men had a similar run in the early 2010s, and they got the win, and they won 4 or 5 years in a row. Can you talk about how, you know, it's just one win for you all, but how does that help the league as a whole? And then going forward, the level of talent and coaches in this league, what you see the next couple of years for the OVC?
Oh, there's no question that this year was the most talented, you know, you go roster by roster in our league. This was by far the most talented group of players. And I think really the best job that the coaches around this league have done in putting together teams and obviously being really difficult to play against. And I don't know that people outside of our conference really got to appreciate how good this team was or this league was, because we didn't get to play as many non-conference games because of the COVID adjustments to schedules. And, you know, my hope is that, you know, because of how everything happened this year with us being able to compete and win a game in the tournament and, you know, moving forward into next year, I think this is a real opportunity for our league to go compete and play against a great schedule in the non-conference, you know, season next year, and hopefully continue this momentum. I think you're right on the money that this could be, you know, the start of something for this league. And I as I watch and play against UT Martin, for instance, I think that team was as talented as any at-large team that was picked for the NCAA tournament this year. And, you know, you go down the list and, you know, you see what, you know, SEMO having a chance to, had they had a chance to compete in the tournament last year when they were, you know, that was disrupted. They were good enough to win a game in the tournament last year. And I think had they had an opportunity to do so, people would have understood again, you know, this league, it's really, really good. And, you know, I'm just thrilled that we're a part of it and that we're growing and we're getting better together. And, you know, I just think through the game preps and how much better I am as a coach, just happen to go through this league every year. And I think the more we get an opportunity to showcase that with the other conferences in non-conference play, I think that's going to bear itself out here in the next couple of years.
We talked about some of the protocols and the changes and the difficult stuff. I'm curious, and I'm going to ask every basketball coach I have on the podcast about this. You know, maybe one of the advantages was the more casual look on the sidelines. Coaches weren't wearing jackets and ties and dress shirts. You know, what did you think about this year? Do you think that coaches will ever go back to wearing suits on the sidelines, and or was the casual look here to stay?
I absolutely loved the casual look. And when you think about it, you know, if you want to put yourself through an unbelievable amount of stress as a coach, and then what's the worst thing you could do? It's tie something tight around your neck, like a necktie, and stand up and sit down multiple times while your mind's going 100 miles an hour and your heart's beating like crazy. And that's probably the worst thing you can do. So this casual look to me was, it was a game changer. I loved it. And I think it might be here to stay, or I might just become a sweater guy. You know, Coach Bird had the sweater vest. Maybe I'll just be the sweater guy. But man, it felt good not wearing a tie this year. So I think that's here to stay for me.
Yeah, it does seem a little ridiculous that coaches are wearing suits and out there, sort of like baseball managers wearing the uniform, which never really makes sense in Major League Baseball too. We're gonna take our listeners back a little bit and just kind of get through your progression. You're and how you got to Belmont. You're from Buffalo, Wyoming. You went to the University of Wyoming. You know, after you graduated, what did you want your career path to do? How did you get started in the coaching profession?
Yeah, so I, you know, my last year at the University of Wyoming, I got to intern with the women's basketball program. Coach Joe Ligursky and Gerald Mattinson, who was an assistant at the time, is now the head coach at Wyoming. You know, those two guys really took me under their wing and gave me an opportunity to get get my feet wet and be a kind of a practice player and learn kind of the inside and out of a basketball program. And after that experience, you know, they had some connections with a North Dakota State men's program, and I got hooked up with those guys to be a volunteer grad assistant, which meant I got to be around, but I had to figure out how to fund it. And I was up there for a summer working camps, and I got a phone call late July from a friend who said, hey, I've got a friend who's looking for an assistant coach, and they're, you know, they need to hire someone pretty quickly here. And it's a grad assistant position, but it's a women's program, and it's in Miami, Florida. It's at Barry University in Miami, Florida. So I made a phone call, and, you know, I had a couple of phone interviews, and I loaded up my Honda Accord and drove 44 hours from Wyoming to Miami, Florida, and was fortunate enough to work for Nikki Hayes Fort, who's now an assistant at Drake and at a Division II program, and got my hands in every part of that program. And I'm so thankful for that experience. And really, you know, I think it was, you know, the 1 a.m. video exchange with VHS tapes, making 18 copies to send out to other programs while I'm doing laundry and while I'm studying and doing homework, that I realized if I'm doing all this and I still love what I do, I think this is what I want to do. And I was fortunate enough from that position to work at DePaul for 11 years, 1 year as a basketball ops position, and then, you know, 10 years as an assistant. And the Belmont thing, I'm good friends with Cam Neubauer, who had the Belmont job before me. And so he would give me all sorts of, you know, you can't believe this place. I mean, this place is unbelievable. Just, he, if you know Cam, he talks stuff up pretty good. So I didn't listen to a lot of it, but man, once the job came open and I came down and I saw it for myself, I just felt like there's something really special at Belmont. And I felt like there's more that can be done at Belmont than, you know, it was in a really good place. The program, I mean, the roster was loaded with talent, but I just felt like there was another level that this place could go. And that intrigued me. And, you know, obviously getting here and being with the people that I get to work with every day, and being in this beautiful city, that this was a no-brainer for me. And I'm fortunate. I don't know how in the world I got this job, but I'm not giving it back, because I absolutely love this place, and I love the people I get to work with, and, you know, the players that I get to coach every day. This has been a dream come true for me.
What's the next step for Belmont then, in your vision? You have a new practice facility that's being built, so there's even more positives along the road. Where would you like to take the program over the next several years?
Yeah, I think there's naturally we're in a place where I think we've been consistently pretty good here for the last, you know, 5-6 years, where the program has won some regular season tournament championships, and obviously this past year winning our first NCAA tournament game. I think there's an expectation here that's what we do, that's who we are. When you come to Belmont, that's what you expect to do as a recruit and as a new player. And, you know, I think our freshman class embodies that very well this year, that they came here with the expectation that that's what we were going to do this year, because that's what Belmont women's basketball, that's just what we do. And for me, I think there's always got to be something that you're striving for. I think complacency is the absolute worst thing that can happen in a basketball program. And we're as thrilled as our group was to win that first round game this year. I don't think there's a single player in our locker room that felt good after we lost in the second round. And, you know, it wasn't like we were just happy to be there. There was an expectation and a feeling that we could compete and win that second round game as well. And when we fell short, you know, I think that feeling of just the it just eats at you, that defeat when you get beat and you feel like you had a chance to win a game, and it just fuels you for what's coming next. And obviously for us, you know, as a program, that's kind of how I operate every year. I'm just trying to figure out, how can we take the next step? How can we get ourselves into this national picture of national relevance, where we're we're receiving votes and we're ranked every year, where we're knocking on the door, that we can be a team that no matter what happens in the OVC tournament, that we're going to go play in the NCAA tournament. And I think, you know, the growth of this league, that to turn this into a two-bid league, and then that's the next step for all of us, that we can get this place and this program, this league, that we're good enough to send two teams to the NCAA tournament every year. And then from that point, maybe we can get three. And, you know, I like to dream big and think big. And that's really where my mind's at, and how can we get to that next step of relevance nationally.
I meant to ask about her a second ago, but you talked about your youth and Destiny Wells. I mean, she was the OVC Freshman of the Year, but then the MVP of the tournament and the numbers she put up, and she was great, obviously, in the NCAA tournament too. You know, just speak to what she brought to your team this year and just the poise of, I know at the end of the season, you're probably not really a freshman anymore, but to play her biggest games when it mattered the most was really impressive.
Yeah, I think you just use the word poise. I mean, that's not something you usually use with freshmen in the same sentence. And, you know, really, I'm thinking back through our season. She was one of our most consistent performers in terms of production, game in and game out. And that's really rare that a freshman comes in and performs consistently. Usually that's something that has to be learned. Freshmen are usually up and down. They hit a wall at some point. They play great one game, and the next game, you know, you wonder where they are. And we never had that with Destiny. She was consistently good the whole season. And that is, you know, as a coach, I probably count on one hand the number of players that came in as freshmen and were consistent throughout a whole year. And for her to do that, and then obviously to show up and compete and play at the level that she played, you know, during the championship game and obviously in the first round of the NCAA tournament, I think it just speaks to her competitiveness and the trust that her teammates have in her, and obviously just the work that she's put into this to get her skills and her game to this level. And, you know, I obviously think the world of Destiny and entrusted her with a lot this year offensively. And she made me look good for sure at the end of the year.
We kind of end the podcast on a couple questions about off the court issues, just to let everybody know, learn a little bit more about you. And the place I want to start was, you're on the OVC Social Justice Working Group, and, tell us why you wanted to be a member of that, because that group brings together coaches, administrators, student athletes, and was started this year to discuss important topics. And why did you decide that you wanted to be a member?
Yeah, I mean, that's a topic that is near and dear to my heart. And it's something that, you know, I've talked to our team about often, you know, throughout the last couple of years, and even really since I've been here, there are so many groups in our world that really are marginalized, and that there's so much that we feel like we are blessed with here at Belmont, and everything seems great on most days. But, you know, if you open your eyes and you take a look around and you notice things, you do realize that not everyone sees the world through the same lens. And I'm fortunate enough that I've been on both sides of a lot of these issues, and that I grew up in Wyoming and we had no diversity. Everyone looked like me, everyone thought like me, everyone was raised the same. There was a really small vision of the world, you know, in my youth and where I grew up. And I loved my upbringing, and it was a great childhood. But getting to live in places like Miami, Florida, and just being immersed in Cuban culture and working with people who were from Spain and Japan, and getting to room with a guy who was from Trinidad and Tobago, and just having different, you know, experiences thrown at me, it opened my eyes. And I think college sports, athletics in general, is probably one of the best ways for people to get through differences and into similarities. And when you're a member of a team in a locker room, you know, you can look a lot different. You can have different political views. You can have different ways that you think and how you operate. But when you come together as a teammate for a common goal, I think you start to realize that we actually all are a lot more alike than we are different. And, you know, obviously with the turmoil of the last year, obviously the pandemic has been stressful, but there's been so much racial tension in our country. I just felt like, you know, it was a place where I could learn and also hopefully help not just with our team, but with our university, our athletics department, help find ways to be more inclusive, to be more respectful of everyone. And I think as we go through this, you know, through this year, we still got a long ways to go. There's still stuff that's happening all over the place that we've got to figure out and get better as a society. But man, it's I'm just thrilled that we're able to start taking the steps, hopefully to hopefully correct this and help this next generation get a lot better than our generation was.
How do you continue those conversations? And during that last working group, I know people talked about, you just don't say, hey, we did it for a year and whatever. You got to keep it on the forefront. What are the next steps, maybe specifically with your team, and you'll have seniors depart and new people come in, and how you keep those conversations going?
Yeah, I think that's an important piece of it, that it's not just a conversation, but it moves into action, and it moves into, you know, what does it look like in your everyday life, and what's going to change in your thinking, and, you know, just giving, I think more than anything, I think giving our players a platform to speak and to talk to each other, to have conversations, that to me has been the most beneficial part of all of this is just the communication that we have with each other, and to try to get understanding of different viewpoints, and, you know, maybe also understanding that there's good in all of us and there's also bad in all of us. And that just because you hear someone with a different viewpoint doesn't mean they're bad. And taking down those fences that we often build around our ideology and trying to make a bigger fence and build a bigger community that we're all in this together. And so I think with our team, we just continue to have those conversations, and you know, our players have been very positive and proactive in how they can move it forward on our campus, and as leaders of our athletics department, how we can make some positive changes within our community, and then hopefully that can spread and grow as we continue to get more educated and continue to go through this process.
And it's two-way, right? You learn as much from your student athletes as they're learning from you in these steps and these actions.
I'd say it's probably way more me learning from them. I would, you know, even that's true for basketball, but especially in this instance, you know, I try not to talk as much when I'm around them in these conversations, because I think I learn a lot more when they speak. So that's been a great part of it as well.
So you referenced some of the places you live. So I was interesting. I lived in Colorado for a while. So I've been to Wyoming, and I researched Buffalo, Wyoming. And obviously it's one of the most scenic and beautiful places with some of the geography. But then you went to Miami, then Chicago, and then Nashville. So compare and contrast that, you know, that rural setting maybe you grew up in, and maybe a little bit more remote to some of the cities you've lived in recently.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be much more night and day than Wyoming and Miami. I mean, Wyoming is peaceful. It's the least populous state in the country. And I think it's the ninth largest geographical area of all the states. So there's a lot of open space in Wyoming. So if you want to go get away and be in your thoughts, you can do it pretty easily. And then, you know, going to Miami, I think there were three hurricanes in the first 2 weeks I was there. And I came from a state where it hadn't rained for like 3 months in Wyoming. We were in a drought, and, you know, it's just, and that's a very small difference. But man, the number of people and the different cultures, that the mixing of cultures was so fascinating in Miami. And those 2 years down there, it was unbelievable to just kind of be immersed in that culturally that I had not been exposed to. And, you know, Chicago and Nashville, I mean, you talk about some pretty cool places to live. I told my wife how fortunate she is. We could have ended up in a lot of places as a coach, but Chicago and Nashville aren't too shabby in terms of places to live. And I count myself extremely fortunate. And I guess I'm just someone who, I loved Wyoming. I loved living there. I loved Miami. I love Chicago. I love Nashville. Maybe I just like it wherever I am. But I think I've been really fortunate, been in some really cool places.
Well, you referenced your wife, and I wanted to talk a little about her. She played professional basketball, including some time in the WNBA. Just how good a player was she? And then I want you, if you all were playing one-on-one, and maybe it's not now, maybe it was in the past, who's winning those one-on-one games?
Well, I'm smart enough as a coach to know how to use talent. And I'm also smart enough to know that I should never and have never and will never play my wife one-on-one, because that wouldn't end well for me. There's no question who the best basketball player is in our house. It's my wife, that's for sure. And that we've got two little boys, and they've got a 50-50 chance to be good at basketball. So I'm hoping that their mama comes through with their basketball genes. But yeah, I mean, she's just been an incredible resource and a rock for me. And she hates talking X's and O's. She loves basketball, but just her viewpoint and her perspective and her stability. I go home and, you know, I think we just had the worst practice in the history of basketball, and I don't think we're ever going to win a game. And by the next day, I'm usually going to work thinking that no one can beat us, because she just brings a stability to me and, you know, calms me down. And, you know, well, maybe you're one of your players is thinking this instead of this. And she gives me a different perspective and a calming influence for sure. So she's, I love that she shares basketball with me, because it's obviously such a huge part of my life and our family's life. And for her to share that with me and for us to experience it together has been, you know, I can't imagine what it would be like if she didn't like basketball. We'd be in trouble.
You referenced you have two young children. So what is your family like to do for fun? So the season's over, you're going to have a little bit more free time. There's still lots to do, obviously, at work, but what do you all do for fun away from basketball?
You know what? I just play with them. I mean, it can be anything. We're playing, you know, they're chasing me with their little stuffed animal gooses the other day, because we've got geese at our pond in our neighborhood, and they're nesting. So the geese are chasing us. So they just whatever sport it is, that's what they're playing. I mean, we were playing hockey the other day because they saw a hockey game on TV, and then we were playing soccer because I was at our men's soccer game. I was a ball boy for our men's soccer team last night. And, you know, they just love playing. And I tell you what, anytime I can be home and just play and do whatever they're doing, it's just unbelievably freeing. And loving Nashville, being outside, and there's so many parks and there's so many places we can go and just experience this great weather and this great city. And even during the middle of a pandemic, I think we've been able to get outside and enjoy some of those outside time for sure.
Well, Barb, again, thanks for joining us, but just congratulations on a tremendous season, and, you know, getting from our perspective, getting the monkey off the OVC's back and winning a game. But we're looking forward to what Belmont and OVC women's basketball is going to do for the next several years. So thanks for your time, and hope you can enjoy the offseason a little bit.
I appreciate you having me, and thank you for all you do for this league. It's much appreciated and not unnoticed.
Well, I appreciate that, and we're going to expect NCAA tournament wins every year now, so you set the bar high.
We'll take it.
That was my conversation with Coach Brooks. I want to congratulate him on getting the proverbial monkey off the OVC's back and finally breaking through with an NCAA tournament win this year. I think you can tell from our conversation, he has great perspective, is thoughtful with his approach, and is more than just a basketball coach. If you have a suggestion for a future guest, reach out to us on Twitter at OVC Sports. Remember to find us on your favorite podcast platform and like and subscribe to help spread the word. You can also visit ovcsports.com/podcast for information on this podcast, as well as find links to all of our school-produced podcasts. Until next time, take care.